Is that a part of the navigation
kit? Yeah.
How does that work? Now, was that in the airplane?
Well, yeah, it had to come out. That was its storage. It all comes out. It's quite a comparatively small instrument. A lot of this stuff here is sort of rubber packing. That is for... You look through that and check it all up there. Field quantity gauge, as they called it. That was recovered from a crash site in France.
Survived pretty well.
Yeah, it bounced, I think. This was one of the reunions, I forget which one it was. But he gave me a cap, this chap, looking at the reunion. And this was his navigator's bag. Well, we have spent thousands of pounds on this, I'll tell you. Oh, very much so. As I say, it's a labour of love. It has to be.
Now, these contrails on this photograph...
No, that's smoke markers.
Oh, okay.
There's a big picture down here, look. That was on the wall and it came stuck, unstuck. What I'm doing this for... Triangle H, that was Thurloy. Are you familiar with these signs? Triangle was the 1st Air Division, and the H was the 3rd I insignia. But you'll notice this aeroplane has got a triangle, means 1st Air Division, but it wasn't one of the squadrons. That has a radome look, place of the ball turret. So this is in later times, when they started using radar for bombing with radar. And then they just had toggleers apart from the lead bombardier. But this is smoke markers being dropped, and for the following aircraft. And so that is a nice picture. That was 160 Squadron when they moved out abroad to their various airfields during the war. These two guys we got to know. Not sure what's happened to Frank, but this poor boy passed away. Ted Danes. And this, by the way, we're comparatively recently acquired here. But George Robinson, he was the longest serving commanding officer here. But that was one of the four squadrons. Because when Jimmy Doolittle took his Mitchell bombers off the aircraft carrier, we got a photo of Jim in there talking with the Queen. And this was one of the four squadrons. I can't remember it all. I've got a little book which tells me. But how Colonel Robinson came to be wearing that, I don't know. I don't know that they called him the Flying Tiger. Four aircraft from four different squadrons, hence the 16. Mitchell bombers packed on an aircraft. But that's nice. Bombing mission here was the 9th of October, and that was led by Charles Overacker. He was the one who went soft on his men, really. Too much of a father figure, a pilot from World War I, and hence the 12 o'clock high story, when Frank Armstrong was sent in to sort the group out.
Right.
And that's where Armstrong said, right guys, we're going in at the deep end. And hence in early 43 was when the 306 led the first American mission over Germany.
Right.
Because he was wanting to force the guys in at the deep end to sort of, so we got to do it, so get in there. That's a little tribute to the Polish Air Force, and this is a letter sent to Thurloy in 1942, and this is the translation of it. And that the pilot at that time, when we opened our museum in 2002, the pilot of the B-17, he flew the aeroplane back to Duxford. And then he drove up by road, and he was looking at that. I'd only got that up. He said, "Do you understand it?" I said, "I don't hardly understand the letters, let alone what it means." He said, "Well, I can't either, but I know a lady that will translate it for you." So she's correct, that's what that letter says. And it was clear of everybody when the Americans came here. Oh, Bramcott, that's the place. That was up in Warwickshire, Bramcott, yeah. And this is the comparison I use, because so many people ask, of the wartime airfield. But that's us down here, but you can't see it. The wooded area, this side of this road that goes out the back here, was all cleared. But then Pete Hudson, one of our photographers here who took this picture, he said, I must have had too many beers on the day, Ralph. Well, the hell, I took it with the area you want covered in cloud. I don't know. But nonetheless, he did. Because making a comparison, look, that bit of perimeter track is that bit down there.
Right.
And you can see the remnants of these hard stands here. Bomb storage over here.
Okay.
All amongst the trees here on the wood. There were four hangars here. 1, 2, 3, 4. That was the wartime control tower just there. All the barracks were between the village, talking to this one, on Thurlow down here, and the village of Kiso, where we now live again, was out here, and that's where I was during the war years. This was the main runway, 0624. It's probably got it marked on it. Not a good enough photograph. And then they started building these hard stands, spectacles they called them. There's about three of them on this. Two or three? I thought there were three. Two, probably. 1, 2, 3. And then they sometimes have 4, 5, 6, 7. These hangars in their heyday were down here.
Okay.
Down, well, this bit continued, and if you can imagine it continuing there and joining up with that, that's coming round here. So they would have been down here, those four hangars.
Right, and the Glenn Miller hangar is over here.
It's now moved, was that one. And that was moved over here. That's it. Light shining. That's it there.
Okay.
You can see it just there. That's the Glenn Miller hangar.
And they removed the control tower.
Yeah. Well, that was here, and that came under this lot, really. So it, when this runway is 10,500 feet long, it's a bigger, 300 feet wide. That was getting onto the RAE. That was the very first vertical takeoff pit. Did you ever come across the thing called the flying bedstead? It was the first vertical takeoff device, and it had little overriders, and by using these smaller jets, you could maneuver. It didn't have wings or anything, and the pilot was basically sitting on top of a jet engine. It wasn't the most comfortable thing. First vertical takeoff bit. That developed into the Harrier. What was done here, you see, for the Harrier. That white mark there, that is the that was the prototype ski jump thing that I have on aircraft carriers. That was a very portable device, that was it. Down here, during the Cold War days, we used to have 6 British Valiants, Victors or Vulcans, whichever atomic bomber was in service at the time. They used to disperse here for periods of time. And then we became a co-located base, and that big Nissen hut that we came past, or Quonset hut, whatever you call them, that was for the Americans. We used to have the A-10s here, the tank busters, whatever they call them, warthogs or something there, but A-10s. And they used to have the U-2 spy planes. Yeah, they used to take off, and as you know, they went up and up in a clear blue sky until you couldn't see them.
There's the hangars. Where were all the barracks?
Oh, all over here.
They're off the map over
well,
here.
Well, there's a few of them just here. The road continues, unfortunately, down here. There are some more barracks here, that's some more barracks. That was the main entrance into the base then. That was the base hospital. This was all the technical site. Station headquarters, it's job to see, it was just there.
Mm-hmm.
That was the station headquarters. And what was your dad, 368th?
Right, 368th.
Yeah, well, the 368th aircraft were all over here.
Close to where we were right now.
Yeah, the 368th. It was primarily the 367th down here, 369th, 368th, and the 423rd. That's basically how they were set out. And then, of course, it's still here. That, where am I? That dispersal there, it's got a B-17 sitting on it then. That dispersal was this one.
Oh, okay.
So all this lot, which you can see way over there, was sort of all built down here. So you see how much more ground it took. That was predominantly the wartime airfield around there.
Oh, right.
So it became a pretty big base afterwards.
Are these bits and pieces of the...
That was these, some of these bits.
So here. A little bit of the hard stands from
this,
that time.
This, if you follow this, there's that hard stand there.
Okay.
Then the perimeter track goes round here, with that bit going off of it. And the perimeter track goes round there, look. And there's the other bit going around it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that lot there. On the map about here, I suppose, because that was the approach to the main runway.
All right.
We would have been...
We're going to...
just. And we was about there, I should think.
Yeah, not very far off, all right.
No, because as I say, looking down our backyard, they used to come in over the top of us. Or take off that way if the wind changed.
And quite a few times there were distressed aircraft.
Oh, bits hanging off. We used to witness these. And it was just about level with our backyard where they used to fire up the very light, very pistol lights, to say they had wounded on board. And so as kids in our own tiny minds, we got to know when they'd had a pretty rough mission. And then you'd see them coming with one motor, sometimes two, not working. And you got an idea of what it was all about.
Right. So any obstacles as they took off? Nice big tree hedgerows or anything?
Well, that was over this way in the main. And if you look down there, when we go back, the ground just drops away.
Oh.
So they used to say if they could fly straight and level, they'd be airborne anyway. Fortunately, there's two crash sites down there. Well, there was. When they went in, you know. And the other thing about this, having the four hangars, now most Class 1 airfields had two, or at the most three, and they were sort of dispersed around the airfield. And this gave the 306 a big boost when they came back, pretty shot up, lost formation and all the rest of it. Because a lot of the other guys wonder how the hell they found their airfield every time. They came back and they were just looking for the four hangars. It's the only base that had four T2 hangars in line. And so the 306 could find their airfield all right. Because as one commanding officer put it, there are more airfields in East Anglia than fleas on a dog. Because I get so many calls at home, See, the 306 haven't got a museum as such. I mean, we've done this to the best of our ability. But so I get lots and lots of emails. And I've got a book. It's a thick book, believe it or not. And it's got details of 638 wartime airfields in this country at the height of the war. Well, that's England and Scotland. And,
right.
You know,
638,
and it gives little drawings of the airfield. And so it was very difficult finding their own airfield. Nobody ever knows not that I've come across, why they should have four building lines here, whereas everywhere else, basically, they were dotted around. That's quite amazing. I don't know whether that would take, or have you seen this picture before?
I did find a website where they had pictures of 50 or so control towers.
Oh yes, there is. There is a website of control towers, yeah. I don't think it has thermite on though.
No, but it has one that looks like it, I think.
It has one of the type, because there are about four or five different types, each had their individual numbers of that type of...
And this one wasn't very tall. It's like a two-story, I think.
Yeah, this one, two-story, and then it did have a glass house on top of it, eventually. Esther Williams in the yellow swimsuit.
Okay. Yeah.
And Dorothy L'Amour leaning up against that tree thing.
Oh, okay.
Road to Morocco, or road to wherever they were going, with Bing Crosby and so. Uh-huh. And Betty Grable with the, whatever you call that hairstyle.
That crazy hairstyle.
I've never seen a hairstyle like that. It looks
well, somebody told me they had to put something, had a big ring to roll it.
Yeah, they've done those with French strip. French twist, but I've never seen it rolled on top.
Now, I wanted a few sort of pin-ups, but I didn't put up what some of the guys had up, because it would probably have offended too much. The BD picture, that's fading a bit, unfortunately. But that would have been the best anti-VD thing, because that girl love drawn on there, or printed on there, she looked absolutely revolting. Uh-huh. So that would keep you away from her, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, just a little collection of bits and pieces. You know, this is an old footlocker, a bit cheered up on that, and we just put a few things in there to give an idea what it was all about.
Wow. Now, these would be underneath the cots and...
Usually at the foot, right?
Usually
that's why they call them footloggers.
They stood here,
Yeah, and they would be provided by the army.
Yes, they're all proper boxes for it. Uh-huh. This one's seen better days.
And so...
this bed's like it.
I guess that's better...
Oh, and
M1 Garand, semi-automatic.
Go down there rather than drink it here, huh?
Right.
Because, of course, it was the Army Air Force, as you know.
Right.
The Special Defense Corps, which they had on every airfield, they were issued with rifles and the appropriate rifles, machine guns, and so forth.
Should we have some tea? The water's boiled and all that.
Well, when they got the G, they put the chin turret, they offset the waist gun's position, they put windows in the waist gun position, and many other things. It made it a much better aircraft. We did the American bed layout, basically on an Army bed layout, because the Air Force guys wouldn't have had the Garand M1s, semi-automatic rifles and so forth.
But they got the lovely cot.
Yeah, it's all genuine. It's from the soldier's handbook that we took the layout.
Did the officers get that lovely cot as well?
Yes, they had some a little bit better. And of course they often divided their big barrack blocks up into probably six to a room. And as you went up in the echelons, you got a room to yourself.
Right.
And so on. But then,
this is the stove in the middle that...
They always referred to them as the pot-bellied stoves. Now, when I was in the RAF, they still had them.
Really?
And I was standing round it one night to keep warm, and I burnt my trousers. But we had a parade the next morning.
Oh no.
So I pressed creases in and tried to walk a bit funny so they didn't crack. Because then.
Did the sergeant see you?
No, I got away with it.
Oh, good.
So I thought,
that's right. Dad was a real sports fanatic, so I got the baseball bats here too.
Oh yeah, that one, by the way. Sorry.
Oh, no problem.
This one was given to me as a schoolboy when they used to crack the hand. And as kids, we used to wrap insulation tape around it so we could play with it.
Yeah.
But look, it's a U.S. Army issue.
Absolutely.
Louisville Slugger.
Wow.
It's seen better days, but it's ideal for what we want here.
Hell, exactly.
That the Army issued baseball bats.
This was for the baseball, and these were for the softball. A little bit different, but again, it's U.S. Army, Louisville Slugger softball handles.
And it used to crack always right there.
Yeah, apparently it was if you didn't hold them quite right, and the grain on this thing, it used to crack. Of course, they had a team here called the Gremlins. Oh. Now, in that team, there were two professionals, and I can never remember their names. But and they were on the ground staff here, and so this gave the Gremlins an advantage. And for 2 years, they were US-based champions.
Wow, that's
here.
Great.
And that's not that we knew they were that, but my brother and I used to go and watch the baseball games.
Uh-huh.
And then as soon as they cracked it here, little guys, and threw it to us, and we had a baseball club to take on.
That's great.
So that's another little bit of history. That was Bedford Railway Station during the war, that top thing.
Now
it's a station covered bit of the platform. Very basic. This, of course, was when they completed their missions. Painted up and then threw them in the reservoir. That one there with the beer can, that was one of the many beer parties they used to have. See all the beer barrels? Second photograph down. There was a visitor there in the Marauder. Look.
This guy here?
Yeah. And there's a British Halifax over there in the next photograph.
Oh, let's see here. No, that way. These are the C...
Yeah, C-47s or right. DC-3s.
Where am I looking?
That British Halifax one. And that was typical of the barrack blocks up the top there. Going along to the end of that second road, look. Or there was the Quonset or Nissen Huts, I don't know what you refer to.
My dad never had a named ship.
Did he?
He flew as extra crew almost always, so...
Oh, right, so you never had a permanent crew.
Right.
He was never with a permanent crew. This was a 369 aeroplane, little Audrey. That's that one.
Okay. Look at the pile of 50mm.
Yeah, that's apparently when they swept out the aeroplane when returning from a mission. Here's their baseball team. Look down here, the Gremlins. These are some of the local scenes, obviously. The Land Girls and so forth. These are some Italian prisoners of war working with the local farmers. And we're still in touch with that guy's family. Got to know him as schoolboys, and we're still in touch with his family. Coloni or somebody, the guitarist. And they travelled as a trio, entertaining the troops, you know. Frances Langford, she was a singer. That picture I love, for both of them, because we got an American, we've got some RAF guys, and we've got a local there, all standing at the bar. I just think it's wonderful.
And where is that?
That's over in what they call the Falcon at Bledsoe.
Okay.
The village. It's a nice pub.
That was the pub in Thurlag? At that point, or?
Yeah, no, that was there, but there were that big house opposite, that was a pub as well. It wasn't as big as that, but that's not a pub in, well, our village, the village is called Kiso, and that, in fact, in the war years, there were 5 pubs there, and now there's just one, and that's fairly close to us, thank goodness, so we can get, well, we get out and eat there because it's
right.
many a night because it's the best value you can get in a local pub over here. The restaurants put on restaurant prices.
What's that?
That's the Jackal just there. And this is the pub that was the other side.
Oh. So were they paved, or was it?
No, they were hard. Yeah,
so not had no problem riding a bicycle. No,
apart from the beer got them to wobble sometimes.
Yeah, right.
My parents used to laugh about it, the way they were fishing many of them out the dikes. They just, you know, they got home and there's no bicycle one. No. Nothing to do with a dozen pints, I'd say. But by reading through various extracts, I could probably find some. You know, just in, not as a list.
And he said that there were comedians that everybody was just falling all over themselves, and then there was strippers.
Yeah.
He said that wasn't very fair to all the lonely guys, but...
Yeah, that was a bit naughty. Well, this one, there is a story. Francis Langford. Now, the guys, many of the guys have told me, they all crowded to get the front of the stage because she didn't used to wear any underwear. So I was told, but it came from various people, not all standing here. Made them look up to her. And
yeah, look up to her, exactly. Now, were these in the in that same hangar? He's not, obviously not. He's outside.
No, he's on this stage as well, I think. And I'm assuming that that chair he's got his foot on is this one here.
This is a local band, I'm assuming?
No, it's a bass band. They were called the Esquires.
Oh, there's a bass band, of course.
Yeah, there's a picture of them over there.
And there, here they are again.
Yeah.
E-E-E, the Esquires. Yeah. And where's that? Where are they standing there?
That was in one of the clubs on the bass here.
This officer's club, or...?
I couldn't say. It might have been the officer's club, I just don't know. We got another one over there, I think. This is the same place. Still don't know. That was a Nissan bar, obviously, this one.
Oh, okay.
Well, one of the officers' clubs was a big Nissan bar. And that's Larry Emmy, he's still alive. Bob D. Baldy lives in Dublin. Great friends of ours, him and Sally. We go over to them to see him, and they come over to us. That's, again, the baseball, or one of the baseball team. Whether
now,
it was a stadium.
There's a bank here.
No, that's the village road. Well, I think there's a ditch the other side,
okay.
And then it comes up, and that's the road running through there. Some of the barracks, look, that was the 367. And over here were the 368. You can't see it.
Okay.
That was the 368. And I always say that one up the top here. It's how it did look sometimes. And I like
And this is a local bus coming into...
No, that was what they called the Clubmobile. The military had a number of those, and they were mobile, well, not really canteens, coffee and donut type. Well, they called them the Clubmobiles here, I don't know.
Clubmobiles.
That was an organisation set up. I don't know, I can't remember. I should know what it said.
Well, it's hard to read with everybody standing in front of it.
Yeah. Then SUS, it's in Camp something. But what I like how they tried to make it look homely, sticking a rickety fence or hence the TARDIS. This is more the home front. Well, all of it really, because Americans asked us to do something like this, because of course, particularly the ground crew, they spent sort of 3.5 years living amongst the Brits. And so these were the thing, the civil defence, the auxiliary fire service and so on, and the ARP, nurses, and the Home Guard, commonly known as Dad's Army. This was created by Churchill for people too old that couldn't, that was no longer eligible to join the full service.
Okay.
They had a home defence battalion, called them, what they called the local defence volunteers to start with. And if we found this old guy, we brought him, that mannequin, over from King's Lynn in Norfolk. And I said to Daphne, we'll put the Home Guard unit on it because...
Looks the appropriate age.
Yeah, and then we tried to do this. I made this little rough shed thing just to sort of give it a background.
This is a warning.
It was a gas rattle, yeah. Particularly for towns, and they used to have dotted around the streets little boards that changed colour if gas was ever dropped. Fortunately, it never was, not in anger. But then the ARP, or the civil defence man, of course you hadn't got the telephones or anything, you couldn't tap on everybody's door. He used to go down the street, mainly on his bicycle, swinging that thing, and that makes a hell of a noise. So they were
calling that's the alarm.
Gas rattles.
So as far as you know, were any of the 600 or so bases ever bombed?
Well, this was bombed, but not whilst the Americans were here. It was bombed when the RAF were here. I think they were bombing a few fighter bases, the Germans, and then Hitler, thank goodness for him, made the fatal mistake of trying to bomb the civilians into submission, knocking hell out of Coventry and all the big cities. But had the opposite effect. And so we didn't win on that one, but that gave the RAF fighter bases time to build up again, and then, of course, start fighting back at the Luftwaffe, and we all know the result of that.
Right. Yeah.